What is your favorite cut of pork, Torque?
If I come in the house, if Trish is at the mercantile and I come in the house and it's 10:30 and I'm hungry because I haven't had breakfast, like, what are you going to have? Well, I can tell you what I'm going to have. I'm going to take like 6 or 8 strips of bacon and I'm going to fry them up, cut them in half. I'm going to stack them on 2 slices of Texas toast with a slice of cheese. I might even put an egg on it if I want to feel, you know, bougie. There's nothing better than a bacon sandwich.
Yep. That's the Torque special.
I mean, and I don't know, last check I had 10 years ago, I was fine.
All of the food we eat and much of the clothing we wear comes from plants and animals that are raised on farms. Farms are different in type, in size, and even in name.
Welcome to Barn Talk, No Dumb Questions Edition. Wow, I butchered that.
That was a dumb way to say that. I know,
dumb way to say that, yeah. Today's going to be a Q&A episode. So a lot of you guys have been sending in your questions through Instagram. I did a poll on YouTube. If you guys don't follow us on Instagram, we got the Barn Talk Show and then at This Will Do Farm. That's where we really get a lot of our questions through the stories. So if you want to submit your questions in, follow us on there, and next time there's a poll, send in your question. But yeah, today we just really wanted to get your guys' questions, answer them, and we haven't done one in a while. And I like doing them. They're really fun hearing from you guys. And someday it would be really cool to have somebody behind the scenes and we could maybe have some callers call in a question. That'd be really cool. But we don't have anybody in the background. It's just Dad and I running this thing. But maybe one day. And also what I'd like to do someday is maybe have a projector screen right here and be able to just react to articles or videos, and so they could have a visual, kind of like Rogan, because I think that's really cool.
It is pretty good.
So we're getting there slowly. Barn's coming together. Everything's coming together. But yeah, we're really excited to get in these questions. We got a lot of good ones. So if you guys get any value from the show, you know the drill. Pay the fee, share it out with your friends, family, coworkers. Everything helps. Leave us a review on Spotify or Apple. Really, it just helps us out a lot. I saw somebody in the comments say they bought some Barn Talk merch. We got that available. Thank you for buying some hoodies. Really appreciate that. So yeah, just pay the fee, guys, if you find any value in this. So give them a good old market update.
Have we got Barn Talk swim trunks yet? I mean, summer's almost here. Summer's almost here.
You know what we need to do?
We need
to make some This'll Do underwear. And put the This Will Do right on the crotch. My girlfriend Kat bought me some custom made underwear that say These Will Do.
Nice.
But she put it right in the crotch and it says These Will Do. And she was like, I was talking about the underwear. And I was like, you need to just say This Will Do because, you know, This Will Do.
It should have just said sweaty balls is probably what it should have said for you there.
Well, I mean, These Will Do kind of relates to your nuts, but This Will Do is, you know what that's relating to.
I don't know.
Snake.
Old. Oh, I got it.
A snake.
Okay.
Mamba mentality under there.
Okay. Well, the whole reason that we got time to do the market update today is because it's too damn wet to do anything else. It's bright and sunny. It's getting cloudy. But bright sunny day, if it was the 18th, 19th, 20th, any day in April, it'd be a good day. But it's May and it's too wet. And this is probably the only day this week that it's going to be sunny. And then it's going to go back to raining. So I don't know when we're going to get anything planted. But we can speculate about the markets we have. That's probably why the markets are as high as they are. So I looked, this is yesterday's close, and corn was $8 in Cedar Rapids if you wanted to haul it up there, $7.87 local at the feeders, beans $16.31 at the board, and $16.46 at the river. Hogs are getting beat to crap. I think the cash market got beat down like $20 over the last 2 weeks because exports haven't been very good. And I mean, anybody out there that knows the price of corn, the price of bean meal, and the price of hogs. If you're grinding $7.50 corn to feed hogs as cheap as they are, that doesn't work very well. So I still think that by summertime, hogs are going to be over $120 a hundredweight just because in the meat, because there's just not enough pork out there. And I just saw this the other day, the poultry market, there's been over 35 million chickens and turkeys that have been euthanized because of avian bird flu. Well, they've either died from it or they euthanized the herd because it was close, the flock because it was close to somewhere else where they had it. But so a year ago, eggs were 90 cents a dozen. Today, they're $2.45 a dozen. And that's like national average. So depending on where you're at, it can be higher than that, lower than that, whatever. Whole chicken was $1.05 a pound. And today it's $1.70. Turkey was $1.14. And today it's $1.70. So that just tells you how much that's played into. I mean, that's not just inflation. That's just supply because we're short. And we got problems all over, you know, transportation. But I saw a really crazy statistic yesterday. Somebody listed off the number of like food production plants. And this isn't just like packing plants. In fact, it mostly was. And I think JBS had a plant on there that had a fire. I think it was a beef processing plant. But these were all like places that made, you know, I don't know, they made Spam or they made Suddenly Salad or they made, you know, whatever.
The good stuff.
Well, just like box food, everything from canned food to box food to frozen dinners, whatever. There was a whole, I bet you there was 20 facilities on that list that had all had fires. And of course, the conspiracy theory is that somebody's intentionally setting arson to this food production because they're trying to drive the prices and the uncertainty and the chaos and all that. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to put my foil hat on for that. But and then yesterday I saw that Aldi's is based in Germany, and it's one of the biggest supermarket, biggest food retailers in Europe. They raised their prices pretty much across the board. I mean, not everything, but the article said the majority of their products, they raised the prices 30%.
I really liked Aldi's before, but not anymore. We used to have one.
Yeah, we did.
It was banger.
I don't know how that plays into the American market, but this was the European. This was all through the EU. They raised prices. And I, you know, like we said before, I don't think it's going to get any better. I think we've got just a lot of problems facing us. And so that's kind of a meandering market update. Yeah. But anyway, that's where we're at.
Yeah, well, that was good. Hey, you got to let the people know what's going on.
There you go. You know,
people like it. I've asked a lot of people that listen to the show, do you guys enjoy the market update? And a lot of people say they do.
Yeah.
They really do. So, because a lot of people don't know what's going on.
Last week, I talked a lot about stocks and earnings, and this week, I didn't really touch on it. I saw that CVS Pharmacies, they had their quarterly update, and their sales were up 11%. But guess why it was up 11%? COVID tests. Mm-hmm. They sold a shitload of COVID tests. So that's probably kind of short-lived, because as people kind of get, people's attention span get kind of slow, and now that we're not in, you know, outbreak status or whatever, I imagine that the number of, their profits aren't going to stay that way off the back of COVID test. So, I don't know much. I didn't see much else that was released. Stocks are down today because the Fed meets, and if they raise rates only what everybody thinks they're going to, I think after that meeting, stocks will probably bounce a little bit. If it's worse or they say anything, you know, they pore over every word that the Fed chairman and the regional bank chairman say. And them guys, they're not half as bright as everybody gives them credit for, but so they're kind of hanging on what they say. So the stock market could finish up a little bit, but it was down. It was down early.
They're discussing if they're going to raise interest.
Probably raise it another tenth or maybe a quarter. I don't know.
Yep.
Hopefully no more than that. Well, I mean, they need to raise it a lot more than that, but they can't do it because it'll crash the economy. They kind of painted themselves in a corner. So.
Yep.
Anyway.
Well, we'll get right into the Q&A. So first question is Starlink, Dad. We got a Starlink system, almost a year ago, it seems like. Got one on your house, got one on my house. It's Elon Musk's internet service.
Satellite-based.
He's been killing it on that, giving internet to everyone in the world. That's his mission.
Yep.
So we got it a year ago, and how's it doing for us?
I love it. It's gotten, don't you feel like it's gotten faster?
Yeah, with the more satellites they've launched.
Because we used to have, it seemed like a lot of times in the evening, like say, I don't know, 8 o'clock, 8 to 9 o'clock. And part of it is because, you know, we're probably watching TV and on our laptop or whatever, but we would have problems with it.
We like, couldn't even get through a damn Netflix show or a movie.
Yeah, without it buffering.
Even get through a movie with, it used to be that way for sure.
But now I don't remember the last time I ever.
I haven't had buffering problems in a long time.
And so the number of satellites that they have up go up all the time. Like they're launching, boy, put me on the spot, but I want to say they're trying to launch like 30 missions this year of putting satellites up. And as the distance between the satellites that are in orbit get closer, the faster the speed is, because your signal up to the satellites and down from the satellites get closer, obviously the closer together that the satellites are. And
it's not like our house is connected to only one satellite. The closest satellite gets the connection.
Right. So when we're pulling signal down, whatever satellite is closest is the one that we're getting it from.
And they can move the more that they launch more satellites.
Right. So the more satellites they launch, the closer together those satellites are, because part of the latency problem or the when it's slow or buffers is you got to remember those satellites are always moving. So as the satellite passes, at some point, your signal, what you're sending up or getting down, it's going to flip to the next satellite. Mm-hmm. And that gap there, your latency moves up and down as far as... So the closer they are together, the quicker those handoffs are.
And the less lag.
Right, the less lag you're going to have. So anyway.
And he wants to have them all around the world.
Yes.
Orbiting the
globe. Yes, and the... Jeff Bezos is wanting to do the same thing. That was part of the reason why he started Blue Origin, was because he wanted to do the exact same thing that SpaceX is doing, that Elon's doing. And they currently don't have any satellites up. And they have kind of gone from being a big proponent of that to doing everything they can to stand in the way of SpaceX doing it.
Oh.
Because the faster that SpaceX moves, the more dominant they become and the less chance that...
So is SpaceX... Is Starlink like a... Is it in SpaceX?
Yes. Starlink is a division of SpaceX.
Gotcha.
So at some point, if the day ever comes that...
They'll branch
off. That SpaceX goes public, they could... In fact, chances are... SpaceX will stay private because Elon doesn't like the idea of having a space company transporting humans to space publicly owned, because that seems a little, there might be some corruption involved. Mm-hmm. So, but a good way to get more money for SpaceX would be at some point they will probably spin Starlink off and do an IPO on it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and keep anyway, SpaceX private.
Yeah, it's crushing though. It's really good.
I really enjoy it. Like I said, we couldn't even like watch a movie at both our places, and we live like a football field away from each other. And it's been way better. I remember before when I was uploading YouTube videos, what we had before Starlink, it would take me. I mean, it'd take like 4 or 6 hours to.
Yeah, you just go to town.
Yeah, I'd just go to town and go to a coffee shop and upload. But now it takes like an hour.
Yeah.
I can do that.
It's getting better. If I don't procrastinate to where I've got to get the podcast up that day, because I had all week to get it edited, but it's now Thursday and Sawyer's like, "You got that video done yet? You got that podcast done?" I will still take the podcast into
the mercantile. Such a huge file. I mean, podcasts are huge files. So, I mean, it's going to take long no matter what internet you have, but, yeah, I'm really satisfied with it. It's been a really good country internet fix. So if you live in the country and you're like, this internet is trash, Starlink is a good upgrade. I mean, it's not as bad, not as good as
fiber,
but is it fiber or Fiverr?
Fiber.
Yeah.
it's not as good as fiber. And we'd like to get fiber, but yeah. It's definitely better than what we had before. What do we have before?
We had it was basically a line of sight. It was a booster where we had a radio that was bouncing the signal off of a big transmitter in our town. And then that was going down to fiber. Mm. And so it was like a radio kind of, and it was fine. It's like, and those are fine till you get too many people on them, and then it just fills up the bandwidth and you can't get, it's just too slow.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, enough about that.
Yep.
Do we have any more plans? Do we have any plans to build more hog sheds?
Right now, probably not, because everything's just unreasonably expensive in the building. The building of the building is unreal. I mean, yeah. I was glad I built my barn when I did, because after, like, not even a few months after, everything just skyrocketed. And really, we don't have, I mean, we have ground, don't get me wrong, but I don't really want to build another hog barn and take away from our row crop. So yeah. I don't think we'd build one on our ground. If we were able to buy ground and we had the money to do it, potentially we would. But I think we're looking more into maybe potentially buying hog barns that from farmers that might not want to continue to do it or anything like that. See opportunity there, and then just revamp the hog barns, do a bunch of reno and maintenance and everything, and get them back to speed, and then rock with that versus trying to build a whole new site with a new well, with a cistern, with a generator, with
driveway,
all that stuff. Buying a site, you got all that stuff there, which is nice.
Yeah, the new building construction has slowed way down. I was talking to a builder yesterday, and they might have like 17 sheds to build. And in a typical year, they would build like 100. And I mean, it's just, but I mean, you can't make it work. You can't make it cash flow. And interest, when you think about interest moving, you know,
it's just going to make it harder.
Oh, it's a killer. And, you know, that it's going to affect a lot of things. That's going to affect the housing market too. But it's between the cost of the building itself and the interest, it's just very prohibitive. And custom feeding rates haven't gone up any. So it's just,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, if you, yeah, that's the hardest part. It's like, yeah, you can build this barn, but you're not going to get paid any more from if you custom feed for anybody. It's not going to go with the prices of inflation and everything. So,
yeah.
Kind of. The only way I see guys building is if they're existing. If they already have barns, because they have the capital and they probably have some barns paid for and they have the ability to build another one.
Right.
There's very few young guys getting started building a brand new hog barn.
Yeah, I think that's the other side of it that was going to hurt the ag business down the road is we've come through a time where an entire generation of farmers, at least in you know, your hog producing states, they have gotten the next generation started by building hog buildings because you know, we've talked about this before, but you could bring a kid back to the farm, build a hog building, have him there to do help with everything else. And the hog building would help offset his labor and you could make that work. And today you can't do it because before you could actually pay, you know, you could pay yourself a little bit of money and still have that shed paid for in 12 years, you know, used to be 7 years, then 10 years, then 12 years. And now it's 15 years. And I don't know if anybody's financed them longer than that, but if you are, you shouldn't do it because that's a really bad idea. But it just won't work today. So, you know, getting these kids back to the farm, I don't know what I've asked every time I talk to my banker, I say to him, you know, what's the hog building? What's going to be the thing that enables the next generation to come back and get started farming? And they don't have any answer for it. And that's a tough deal. It's not going to hurt us right now, but it's going to hurt us, you know, down the road.
I think truly it's just, you're going to have to get creative. Like that's the next hog barn is creativity and trying to get smart on how to make a buck.
Yep.
I think brand's really important because there's homesteaders. There's people out there that are homesteaders that don't have a massive herd, but they're making a lot of money per pound of whatever they're selling because they sell. They have the brand, they have the story, they have all that. So I think that matters. Just getting creative is really important. That's the next hog barn because like, there's really not anything else that's come up yet. So
nope, that's right.
Are we going to try anything new this year on the crop side of things?
A little bit. So one thing that we're doing, which isn't much different, but is a little bit, in typical years, we go over all our stocks. All of our stock ground that's going corn on corn and what's going corn to beans, we go over it with a mechanical stock chopper. It's called a Bessler. And, I mean, it does just a little bit of tillage, not really, but it really breaks down the stocks. And this year, we're not even going to do that. So David, the guy that combines for us, he put a set of these rollers on his corn head last year. I think Yetter might make them. And they did a really good job of busting up the stocks, basically as we were combining. And you know what? You know, his planter set up, it's got good trash wheels on it, and it's got all the goody go fast stuff. He's kind of a softy for planter technology. Mm-hmm. His planter's all pimped out. And so I don't think it's really needed. And with fuel prices the way they are and the kind of spring we've had, we could totally do it if we wanted to, but I think we're going to try not doing it and see what happens. I'm not worried about emergence or anything like that, especially because with this weather, when it finally does turn, it's going to get hot fast. Mm-hmm. And no tilling, it's probably going to be better just because we won't have as much problem with crusting as we would if we worked that ground a little bit. So I'm good with that. And then the other thing that we're going to do, which we used to do this and we got away from it. We used to put on in-furrow fertilizer, Keaton seed firmers that had the tube in them, and we used to dribble on a little pop-up, they called it. And then we got away from it, and the reason was because it just takes so much time because you got to fill with seed, but then you got to fill in between times with the fertilizer. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some value there, and you know, David decided that he wanted to do it on his own ground and asked me whether or not we'd be interested in it. And we're going to split up. You know, we're not putting on as much nitrogen with the spray, and so we're going to put on a little bit of pop-up, and then we'll probably come back and side dress if we think we need it. So we're going to do it this year.
Two things different.
Yeah, other than that, the same.
Yeah, and we're not all, like, I think a lot of people get insulted when you're a no-till guy and they think, well, you think no-till's the end-all be-all. I mean, in our situation, we can just afford to do no-till because it's not like we're in Minnesota, because like millennial farmer, he has to because his ground temp,
it'll never get warm enough,
so he's got to till it up, which that makes sense. Yep. In our case, our ground temp gets to the right place. It gets warm enough for us.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go to, nobody's ever going to ask me to stand up and speak at the National Corn Growers about my phenomenal crop knowledge. All I can tell you is we quit chiseling, plowing, field cultivating, all that. We quit all that gradually, probably over the last 12 years. And we changed so many things from when we stopped doing that to where we are today. And then the other thing was we never had as much manure as we do now. So we've got plenty of manure. And we've started working a lot harder on our
soil biology, soil health.
And
I mean, I don't care what you say. Soil health is kind of one of these terms you throw out there, but I think it is important when you get the basics down of your crop. What's the thing that's going to take it to the next level? Well, that will. I mean, that's all you can really focus on after that.
Yeah, and we've just been tweaking stuff as we went, and what we found was we've had zero yield drag from going away from conventional tillage to minimum tillage to basically no-till. I mean, you can say that when we chop with that thing, it's a little bit of tillage, but we may get to the point that we're not even doing that. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, you know, we do a little bit. We'll touch up if we get a washout somewhere. But you know what? As our biology's gotten better, the amount of water that'll infiltrate and the rate that it'll infiltrate, you notice when you're out in the field, we don't get near the washouts we used to. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sold on it. The next thing that we're headed towards is doing cover crops. Mm-hmm. We're probably going to buy a drill, you know, just get a used crust buster drill and put some money in it, fix that thing up. And we're going to probably start doing cover crop. And that's kind of a hard thing to pencil because,
well, here's what I think people don't
realize with that, like when we had Mitchell on, we asked him personally about his farm, and I won't get into the details on his family farm, but they've really made it work because their input costs are next to nothing.
They've saved so much money on...
It's not their yield is drastically going up. Their yield's doing really well. Average yields, but the input costs are next to nothing.
Right.
Because of all the cover crops and stuff that they're doing, and their soil biology is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's going to get to be a bigger and bigger thing. You just wait till this fall. When you get to this fall and you see fertilizer prices, you see seed prices, you see fuel prices, the number of people that are going to be looking to limit how many trips they make across their fields, limit how much herbicide, pesticide, fertilizer that they're using, that's going to be there's going to be a lot of demand for ways to cut that back because the cost is going to be outrageous. So
yeah, and I mean, like I said, it really depends on your situation with the tillage. Like if you live in a certain state, you're probably going to have to till if you need to. And I'm not bagging you on or anything, but a lot of the guys that are, you know, pro soil health and pro soil biology say when you deep till and mess up that soil root system and you totally mess up the root system and all the soil biology going on there and you just bring it up, it's like starting over.
Yeah.
You're pretty much just starting over every year.
Yeah.
And you're not letting that stuff build up.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can't lie. That kind of makes sense. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
So if you can afford not to, I think that's, I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm no freaking crop expert, but I mean, that really does sound like, you know what, if you cannot disturb that root system down there and all that biology going on, the better probably you'll be off and the better soil health you'll have.
Yeah, and it's a thing, and that's a beautiful thing about farming. If you're lucky enough to be able to do it over a lifetime, it's a building block deal because every year is a different year, but over time you can see trends, and you know you can kind of see what's working and what's not. So we're just going to keep trying to find what works.
The great part about it too is everybody's farm's different. Everybody's farming somewhere different, and that. You got to do different stuff in different places, and that's great. And no way's the best way, and no way's the one way. It's a great part about farming. You can do it a million ways.
All this talk about higher prices and what could be in the fall, if we're headed to a recession, which we can debate about whether we're headed to a recession or not, so what's the best investment going into a recession?
So right now, if you have money and you want to put it into something, what's the best recession-proof asset is what.
Well, I don't know if anything's recession-proof, but
yeah, I'm a firm believer in hard assets, real estate, cropland, farm ground. Sorry, storage units, you know, any franchises, laundry mats, all that kind of car wash. I mean, all that stuff. Having a hard asset that's in real estate, I think, is really good. Bitcoin, I believe in Bitcoin. I think it's a great hedge against inflation, great hedge against, you know, the recession. I don't know. We haven't really seen a recession affect Bitcoin yet. So I don't know what will happen there, but what Bitcoin stands for, it really seems like it's kind of might be recession proof a little bit.
Well,
a lot of people, they think it's like gold. So, you know,
well, the idea is, I mean, part of the reason that we have problems headed towards recessions because we've printed too much money. So in other words, the value of the money you have has been eroded over the last however many years. The idea with Bitcoin is it's a finite number. Everybody knows what the transactions are. You can't
print anymore.
You can't manipulate it as far as how much. Mm-hmm. And so it should hold up well. The problem I think that everything is having right now, and you know, I'll add, we talked about this, good companies that have pricing power, that as the dollar devalues and your dollar, you know, as inflation continues, people that have pricing power, people that can raise the price of the product they're selling and people will still buy it, those are good stocks to buy. I don't think the stocks are going to perform great, but they're going to be more resilient than a lot of stocks out there that don't have pricing power.
And index funds, you know, because they're going to suffer too. So
what I was trying to get to there was that all this money's been pushed out. We've all gotten all this money, and all this money's been put into everything. everything from Bitcoin down to the shittiest of shit coins, people have had extra money and they're investing, they're chasing it. They're buying tech stocks, they're buying startups, they're buying houses, they're buying real estate because the money's been out there. Well, now then, with inflation going up and with interest rates going up, that money is being sucked out of the system because people are hoarding their money or they're not moving it around as much and they're not looking for new investments. They're looking for the safe place because they're nervous. Yep. So as far as how Bitcoin performs, how the stock market performs, how your real estate market holds up, that's going to be interesting to see because for the short term, it may all suffer and people are going to be standing around going, oh yeah, see Bitcoin, it's not worth a crap. It's not doing any better than that. Well, that may be true for the short term because you're pulling all the liquidity out of the market. But as that happens and people start making the hard decision, where am I going to park my money? That's where Bitcoin may shine. And that's what, I mean, that's my speculation is that it will because people are going to decide, okay, I'm going to put it in that because it can't be manipulated. It can't be devalued. Mm-hmm. And so later, you know, when we're talking late this fall into next winter, you may see Bitcoin hitting new highs because people will be pulling money out of other things that aren't performing or are being devalued because the dollar is devaluing and inflation and all that and putting it into that.
Yeah, I believe in that too. I think out of all, if you're not putting in a hard real estate, you're not putting in a hard asset that you can physically see and touch and everything, Bitcoin, I think, will be better than the stock market. Most, yep. I think more people would go towards crypto than the stock market. But going back to the real estate thing, yeah, if you can buy hard assets, one thing that I said, and we've touched on this topic so many times, like just don't partner with people, don't partner with a bank that don't have a really good relationship with you. So don't go to U.S. Bank if you're going to go buy your first
Wells Fargo or Chase Manhattan.
Because you're just a number to them. You're just a number to them. And if you don't have a real relationship with that bank and, you know, recession hits, 2008 happens again and real estate market goes to shit, they're going to call in people's loans and they don't care if you're not going to be able to pay it or not. But if you're at a local bank, you have a relationship with them, you have a track record of making them money because you have other properties and you've paid interest and et cetera, you have that relationship, chances are they're not going to go behind your back and lose your business because they know that would just tarnish the relationship. They're going to try everything they can to help you out during
and they
time.
Live in the same community you do.
Right.
So
right.
they want stuff that's
well,
going to help
if you're,
the community.
You know, even if you're investing outside of your place that you live, still go to that local bank, you know, because you have a better chance of forming a good relationship there and showing them that you're doing good in their community rather than a massive bank. And same with investors. If you're going and buying a freaking 40-plex or you're going and buying a storage unit facility and you partner with somebody, when times get tough, that's when the real character comes out and you got to make sure that you can trust that person. You got to make sure that they got your best interest in mind of what you guys are doing because people get skittish. People get nervous when shit hits the fan and you got to make sure you got the right partners on your side. So that's what I'll say. I'm always going to say the best investment, no matter what, for recession proof, whatever you want to say. I think hard assets, real estate is the king. The king, no matter what. Do I think you need to put all your eggs in one basket? No, but I think it could create you a lot of wealth.
So your part about banks and local bankers, that really ties into who do you look for advice? Because what you just said there, what I was thinking about was, and this is probably more so for people your age, around your age and younger than for me, but the sooner you can learn this, the better off you are. And some people don't learn it at all. Some people learn it very late in life. Find people that are good at the things that you don't know anything about or that you do not want to take the time. There's a limited amount of time that you can spend learning about this, that, and everything else. And so, like, find whatever town you live in, whatever your age is, find a banker find a bank first, but within that bank, find a banker and get to know that person and let that person get to know you, who you are. Spend the time to cultivate that relationship when times are good, because when times are bad, that relationship is worth a lot because they're going to help you get through it because you have mutual interests. And that's the same way with, I cannot stress to you how important it is to have a relationship with a lawyer. You may have a lawyer that you never need. I mean, obviously I'm getting older, so I need a lawyer more. This all really started when my dad got old enough that, you know, you were talking about wills and trusts and stuff like that. But find a lawyer and spend the, if he's charging you $200 an hour, spend $100 on a half hour. And sometimes they'll do an initial consultation for free, but find somebody, feel them out and get to know them. And at least so they know you, because when you need somebody's not the time to go looking for those kind of people. Mm-hmm. And find an accountant, find a banker,
find a real estate agent,
find those people and invest in those relationships. Even if you're not in a point in your life where you need that service yet, spend a little time to invest in it. Because if you have a group of people around you that are good at things that you may not know a lot about, and this is not an excuse for not doing your own research. And I will say this, when you talk to somebody about... when you talk to an investment guy, everything he tells you is going to be from his schooling and from his point of view and the people that have shaped his viewpoint. So just know that, because you may do your own research and you may come to a different point, but that doesn't take anything away.
Well, our accountant said it really simply. He said, when you tell me things, I'm looking at it at an accounting lens. I'm looking at it as an accountant.
Yep.
I'm not looking at it as an investor. I'm not looking at it as a business owner. I'm looking at it as an accountant.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was
that's what you got to know when you sit down and talk to somebody. Just know whoever you're talking to, you're going to get lawyer advice. You're going to get accountant advice. Yep. So that doesn't mean that that's the advice. Right. That just means that's their opinion. And that helps shape the decision you ultimately make, but just know that.
And that's what's important about it. You take all that information, find good people, cultivate a relationship with them, and then use that advice to come up with your own decision. And, you know, you're not always going to be right, but neither are they. But because if you can sample several people that are good at whatever, it'll help you make better decisions. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that I kind of stole that whole thing for myself.
Well, I mean, I can answer it. For me, I mean, yeah, that's all really good points, because like you said, when times get hard, you got to have those people available and not go looking for them when it's hard. And that's important. So yeah, definitely cultivate relationships in your community, because they know what's going on and they can help you with business decisions in your community with whatever you're going after. So that's really important. I guess I'll go large scale. Who do I look for advice? I look for advice in my dad. I look for advice in my circle of people. I have a very close circle of people that I talk to, I limit my time with people that I know are going to be negative, that aren't going to believe in what I'm doing, that think I'm crazy for what I'm doing, whatever. I really try to spend my time with people that believe in me and believe what I'm doing, and I believe in them and believe what they're doing. So I go to advice for those people, get their opinions on things. And then I also really, really, you guys know this, I've talked about it many times, but I go on the internet, I listen to podcasts, I watch videos. My whole Twitter feed on Twitter is full of influential people, positive people, people that can give me value on learning new things in business, investing, life, psychology, all these things, because that shapes your mind, that makes you learn new things. And I think those people, although you can't ask those people a question, they might have already put out a piece of content that has the answer that you're looking for the question that you might have at that time. Yeah. And that's happened to me a lot. So it's like, it's not necessarily me going and asking that person online a question. It's me searching for that answer that they've already given. And that's really big. And trying to use your circle
and then trying to get the people on the internet that are giving out value for free and trying to bring all those, it's like what we talked about, bringing those opinions together and kind of forming your own decision making, your own philosophies is really important. But I think surround yourself with people that are super positive and that believe in you, and then you believe in them as well, and they're not skewing, they're not skewing what they're saying to you, and you don't have to tiptoe around them when you start talking about what you want to accomplish, because there's a lot of people that get pissed off about that and they don't like that. And there's a lot of people that get jealous, or there's a lot of people that, you know, just insult you for it. But if you can get around people that can give you genuine feedback of how they think about things, not in a skewed way, just how they actually feel, that's a, those are good people to have in your circle.
If you weren't in the ag industry, what would you be doing?
For me, I would definitely be probably full-time in real estate right now. My brother's kind of the head of what we're doing as far as real estate investing, and I'm on the back burner of that. And I try to help out when I can. But if I wasn't farming, I'd be side-by-side with him running that mofo. You know, I'd be with him on that for sure. And I also would probably do some media. I know social media really well. I can make good content. I know how to create clips. I know how to do content very well. So I'd probably do some media stuff as
freelancing.
Well, well, I think I'd probably start my own media company of doing social media for people in Iowa.
Building brands.
Midwest. Yeah. Help businesses create content and build a brand.
Yeah.
That's what I'd probably do.
If I wasn't farming, the easy answer would be I'd be selling something, because I spent a lot of time doing that. But I really think, you know, a few years ago, talking about finding information, I think one of the most pivotal experiences I had is I found a platform, and it's called Real Vision. And the guy that helped form it, the partner, his name's Raul Paul, and his stuff's out there on the internet. They give a lot of stuff away for free, but they have a subscription service, and you know, it's tiered. You can get clear up to one-on-one mentoring if you're a trader. But man, like, I went down a rabbit hole. It was about the same time that I went down the Tesla rabbit hole, and I really dug deep into what they were. A lot of the information they had, a lot of videos they had, and a lot of the chats that they had with other people. And I would say if I wasn't farming and I was selling, I would be working as fast as I could to build a big enough nest egg that I could just run a family office. And by family office, I mean just basically invest in my own money for my own income, just because it's
in
one of the...
In the stock market.
Yeah, in the stock market. And really, you know, whatever.
Just a family investing office.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to do it for anybody else, because I wouldn't want to be responsible for, you know, when I get people to ask me, you know, oh, what do you think? I don't like doing that on a personal basis, because I don't want to be, I couldn't be a financial planner, because I wouldn't want the responsibility of telling them, oh yeah, you should buy this. Or,
yeah, this is not financial advice.
This is a lot of things, but it's not financial advice. So yeah, that's what I'd be doing, I think, is probably selling something and building a family office.
Like that answer. You can maybe still do that eventually. I'd like it. We could all pool in our money and you could go ham with it.
There you go.
I don't know if I'd give you all my money, but I'd let you play a little bit. what are your thoughts on God? So, yeah, so this is something that we haven't touched on in this podcast, is religion. And it's not like we don't want to talk about religion, we just haven't. But
yeah,
Dad can give you his wise wisdom of what he feels about it.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a good piece of advice that I got from a guy that owns a very successful business is he said, and I think he said his dad told him this maybe, but he said, you've got to run your business like it will never end, and you've got to run your life like it could all end tomorrow. And that's pretty powerful. I don't know what you want to say. Thought.
Statement.
So it's hard. So in a nutshell, what it comes down to is everything I have and the success that we've had and the legacy of this farm wouldn't be possible without Jesus Christ. I'm a believer in that. And I think it's one of those things that farming in and of itself is an act of faith. It just is. You know, you go out there every year and you risk everything. And all you really have is the faith that somehow it's going to work out. And when you've been at it long enough that you have, and I don't care what, this goes to any family that has stayed close enough that you have the history of generations and you have that legacy. I don't know how you could go through those generations and look back and not have a faith because you see all the good and all the bad, and the good outweighs the bad. And then the other thing is, you know, I'm 50 years old and I feel like I'm Sawyer's age, and some people think I act like I'm Sawyer's age.
That's good, because you know what? That keeps you young.
Well, it does, but you know, I think I've got some good years ahead of me, but in the grand scheme of eternity, whether I died tomorrow or whether I die 25 years from now, or I make it past my dad and I'm 100 years old, a lifetime is like that.
Yeah, this stuck with me a lot. Like when you told me this, I remember exactly where I was when you told me this. So that's, it's funny that you don't realize that time on this planet, we created time.
Right.
Humans created time.
Yeah.
So time in heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, yeah. A lifetime might be like that.
Right. Yeah, so that's exactly right. The whole idea of time is humans made that to keep track of things, to keep a ledger of things, just like we created money, just like we created everything. And we like to project ourselves to God, like that he's one of us and we're one of his, he's not one of ours. And so there's a lot of things that we've created that he had no intention of that. Maybe he did have intention of that, but time is one of those things that time is made by man, not by God. In God's eye, time doesn't exist. So things just are, or they're not. And so we get real caught up and you know, I've been there. As you age, your priorities change. And when you're young, it's about accumulating stuff, and it's about keeping up with people, and it's about, you know, getting things that you like just because, you know, they're cool, whatever. And the older you get, it's more about experiences and it's more about family. But, you know, I grew up in a Presbyterian church with lots of potlucks, and I don't agree with a lot of organized religion because people are always amazed when churches fail and when people in churches fail. And it's no different than government. Churches are built by people. Governments are built by people. Businesses are built by people, and people fail. My perspective is that I'm a sinner. I am a flawed individual. But everybody is. And really, my goal is to, and I, you know, I fail at this too. I try really hard to not point out the splinter in someone's eye when there's a log in mine. And you can talk, because we talked about this. I feel like religion gets hijacked a lot.
Yeah. Well, I kind of give you, I also remember you going back to what you were talking about with farming. I remember one year, because you've seen it and you've lived this, of the good and the bad. We had a year where we really needed the crop to be successful. And I remember you sat outside and like prayed on the patio, on the picnic table, like, we really needed a rain.
Yeah.
We really needed a rain. And you sat out there and prayed for a long time. And I'm not saying like, you are the sole person that was praying and that's what happened, but it happened. We got a rain.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that was really like, that really, I don't know, that touched me in a way, because you're right. Like, we put it on the line every year, and then we have no control of what's going to happen, and it's kind of in God's hands. But I would say that I am also a flawed individual, and I'm kind of in this young stage where I'm trying to build a legacy. I'm trying to build a future for my kids, and you know, I'm trying to do as my best I can at this age to just build something for this family and leave a legacy. And I get really caught up in that in my day to day, and that's what I focus a lot of my time, a lot of my energy on, and it's what I think about constantly. And I probably don't do a good enough job communicating with God, checking in with God. But at the end of the day, I know everything that I'm doing, all the thoughts that I have, the person that I am, is all because of Jesus Christ and my Lord and Savior. And I do try to check in when I accomplish something or when I'm down and out, you know, ask for his help, strength, give me strength. Also, like, I say, you know, this wouldn't be possible without you. And you, like, I'm somebody that goes as deep as, like, thank you for giving me this mindset. Thank you for giving me this idea. Because I feel like even he made me who I am, and he makes my mind my mind. And he gives me the ideas that would benefit me in my future. So even there, it's all because of him, you know. So I don't do a good enough job of that, and I need to do better. And I think as I get older, I think I will get better at that. But at the end of the day, I am a believer, and I need to do better, and I will do better. But I'm everything that I have and everything I will ever have is because of God. And one thing I wanted to say is, if you're not a religious person, there's no hate towards you. There's no judgment towards you. Whatever you believe in, we're just showing what we believe in, and we have no judgment towards you, and we're never going to, just like you said with the splinter, and we got a freaking whole log in our eye. You know, we're not going to judge you for anything, but this is something that someone asked us, so we felt like touching on it. And yeah, so back to the church thing, and how these churches are just like government and other businesses, you know, they fail and they got people in there. I just think there's a lot of churches out there that are in the status game, to say, in the fact that they care so much about what it looks like to the community that they're in. The people that work for the church, it matters really. It's really important to them to showcase that we have no sinners. And I'm not saying every church is like this.
Right.
I'm not saying that. But there have been instances, and there has been churches out there that somebody that works for the church does something, and then they're judgmental, and they don't want them to work on that church anymore, work for that church anymore. And how hypocritical is that? I mean, because we all are sinners. And I guess, yeah, you want it to look good for the public, but to me, that leaves a really bad taste in my mouth as somebody that would go to a church. And if that happened to the church that I went to, I would probably stop going, because that's hypocritical. And I think there's a lot of churches out there that do that. They play the politics, they play the status game, and they want to have the holiest staff that they can. And if you're not that, well, we'll do away with you. And that's not what Jesus would do.
Right.
And so I think if you have a personal, because there's a lot of people out there that sin all week long and don't give even a thought towards God all week long. And then when Sunday comes, it becomes the status thing. I'm going to church because I want everyone to know that I'm at church, and I'm going to check in with God for 2 hours. And then after that, I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to go on about what I did the rest of the week. And it becomes this, it doesn't even become about God. It becomes about
a habit
and what you look like to people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's way more important to have a personal relationship with God yourself than going to church and, you know, perceiving this perception that you care about God at church.
And if you're somebody that goes to church every Sunday, there's nothing wrong with that either.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We did that for a long time. I mean, and I'll be honest, my wife and I have been kind of searching. So after my dad died, and then not long after that, my wife's mom died, and it was right during COVID, and, you know, it was really isolated. And when we first came back from that and we went to a church service, It was a rah-rah-rah church service of what I call toxic positivity. This idea that if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, that every day the sun shines upon you and, you know, everything is great. And it was exactly the wrong time for us to hear that message because neither one of us were in a good place. And man, that just, it just kind of took the wind out of our sails. And we really have not with any consistency gone back to church. And it's really not anything against, that church in particular. And, it's really what we really have concentrated on is our personal relationship, more than a public relationship. I grew up on a good church potluck, and it's good because, you know, it's what we need in this country as we go into times that are trouble. Churches are the kind of institutions that are going to help people get through. It's that group of people that have a heart for caring for others that we need in this country. And so I'm definitely not bagging on that because that's what we need. I just am not in a good place to be in that spot.
It's just like anything. Businesses are good if they're good.
Yeah.
And churches are great in concept if they're good. And they genuinely are about that.
Yeah.
But not all churches are that way.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we just get too serious about, you know, my sense of humor comes from God. I mean, it is. I'm the way I am because that's how I was made. And when I was a kid, I grew up listening, my parents listened to AM radio, and there is a great audio bit, and I'm sure you can find it if you Google it. And I don't know who the guy is that did it, but it's this bit, and it's called Phone Call from God. And it's like a radio parody. The one guy does the whole thing. And he's literally like him and his wife are watching Johnny Carson, which is, you know, I'm telling you how old I am. But and the phone rings and he's trying to get his wife to answer it and she won't answer it. And finally he goes and picks up the phone and it's God and God's calling him. And he's wanting to know, he's asking him these questions. And he's like, what's that, Lord? Oh, yes, sir. We go to church. We go to church every Sunday. Yes, indeed. We never miss. What's that? Last Sunday, what'd the preacher preach on? Last Sunday, what'd the preacher preach on? It was a pulpit. He preached on the pulpit. Oh, what'd he preach about? What was it about? Well, it was Mark or maybe it was Luke or John. I don't remember what book it was on, but boy, it was good. Anyway, it goes on and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes through it. At the end, his wife asks him who it was that called, and he goes, it doesn't matter who called, just know that the next time the phone rings, you answer it because you needed it a whole lot worse than I did. And, you know, that's kind of how we all are, is we think that our problems, God shouldn't worry about our problems. There's other people that got a lot bigger problems than we do. The truth is we're all the same because God doesn't grade your sin. You know, you project everything on somebody else, like somebody else is much worse than you. But boy, that was kind of a long, long deal. So the long story short is we're believers and we're Christians. And we're working on it. We're a work in progress.
Yeah, and I think one last thing. I think there's a lot of people out there that think Christians, and there are Christians out there like this, that cast stones at people and judge them for if they aren't believers, and that's just not how we are. Do whatever you want to do, whatever relationship you want to have with whatever religion, go for it. Or if you don't believe in religion, go for it. I would still sit down at a bar with you and have a beer and talk to you because I'm sure we could find something in common. So
there you go.
That was a little deep. But yep. Are you going to ask me number 10 or are you skipping?
Do you see any ways that you may further diversify the farm in the future?
I think that this social media thing, I mean, this is a big diversifier for us. You know, we're slowly growing every day and trying our best to continue to grow it and teach people about ag. And, you know, do our thing there and try it. We're, you know, eventually we'll monetize this thing, you know, and try to make a little bit of money while we do it because we have fun doing it. But, you know, it's a lot of work. So this is helping us out a lot. And I think the long-term horizon of all this, it's going to help us out a lot with diversifying the farm. And it already is, just not at the scale in which I think it could be. Also, I think if we could start a direct-to-consumer business, I think that'd be really awesome. I think if we could sell pork directly to you guys, I think it'd be really cool because we have the whole connection with our farm and you get to see our day-to-day lives. And there's really no one out there really doing that, so I think it could be huge. It's just a matter of getting it started. And then finally, I think, you know, vertical farming is really intrigues me. Growing vegetables inside and being able to grow them really quick and then be able to ship them out to local grocery stores and getting paid. I'd really like to do it for somebody under contract, kind of how we do pigs where they pay us so much.
And not have to worry about the marketing.
Yeah, not have to worry about the marketing of the actual lettuce or tomatoes or whatever we grow. I mean, I feel like I could probably do it because I can do the marketing, but we're already trying to market all this other stuff. So I would really like to be, just take care of the vet, you know, take care of the plants and do my part there rather than have to do all of it. So I think that's an opportunity that is coming, and that very well could be the next hog barn. You just never know. Right. Just never know. So those are the things. I like cattle. I love eating steak. It's damn good, but, I don't see us ever really going in the cattle business. I think it'd be cool to have, you know, a few cattle to raise and then butcher ourselves and eat them, you know, because like I said, I love steak. I think that'd be really cool. And being able to play cowboy a little bit would be kind of fun, ride a horse and do that. But other than that, I don't see us like going in massive scale into cattle. And then hay, you know, we can't really do hay because guess what? I don't want to sit out in the summer and bale hay all, you know, yeah, I did that and our time's pretty valuable. We got a bunch of stuff that we got to do, and hay is nothing but time. You're sitting out there, and you're just, you know, we do that enough as it is, and plus we'd have to use this hayloft, and then there goes Barn Talk Podcast if we got to use this hayloft for actual hay. So I don't see us.
We could have an online hay auction right here at this table.
Yeah, there you go. You guys can come get some
I'm with
hay.
You. My days of baling hay are done. I don't think I'm interested in that.
But yeah, those are kind of the opportunities I see that can really help us out and diversify. And I think that's really important for any young farmer that's getting into their family farm, or if you're a first-gen guy, just really think about the creative ways that you can diversify your farm because they're out there. You just got to search for them. And the opportunity might not be there right now, but you got to see what's coming too because we're constantly moving as a world and as an industry. So what is your favorite cut of pork, Torque?
The pork ribeye.
Pork ribeye.
Yeah, pork ribeye from the Tuscan Moon in Kelowna, Iowa. That's the best. If I could perfect their recipe, it's a closely held trade secret, but if I could perfect that, I'd probably just stay home even more than I already do.
Yeah, it's definitely better than a pork chop.
I mean, I back up. So I've got a pellet grill, and I don't bother with the haters that tell you that a pellet grill is not a real, you know, barbecue piece of equipment. I don't have time to mind a pit. So I love pork butt. I love smoking a pork butt. There's nothing better than pulled pork. When you pull that off and you shred it, it's the best. I love smoking a pork loin. I love bacon. I mean, you know what? Honestly, now that I think about it, yeah, I love the pork ribeye, but I probably eat bacon. I probably eat bacon at least 3 days a week. Maybe sometimes I eat it 5 days a week. There's nothing better.
Really?
Well, yeah, there's nothing better than if I come in the house, if Trish is at the mercantile and I come in the house and it's 10:30 and I'm hungry because I haven't had breakfast, like, what are you going to have? Well, I can tell you what I'm going to have. I'm going to take like 6 or 8 strips of bacon, and I'm gonna fry them up, cut them in half. I'm gonna stack them on 2 slices of Texas toast with a slice of cheese, and I might even put an egg on it if I want to feel, you know, bougie. There's nothing better than a bacon sandwich.
Yep, that's the Torque special.
I mean, and you can talk to my cardiologist. This whole thing about cholesterol and fat, I tell you what, I don't use any hydrogenated oils at all. I use I use
butter,
butter, bacon fat, olive oil, and avocado oil. That's all I use. I don't use anything else. No hydrogenated oils. And I don't know, last check I had 10 years ago, I was fine.
Got to probably get another one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. Bacon is by far number one for me. It's just can't beat it. And it, you know, the best part about bacon is even if someone messes it up, you know, they get it too crispy for you, it's not done enough for you, however you like your bacon, chances are you probably still would eat it.
Yeah, you're probably still going to eat it.
You still are going to eat it.
You're going to bitch about it.
Yeah,
but you're still going to eat it.
You're going to still eat it. Sometimes with with eggs, you can't do that.
Really. No,
if the
no.
eggs are shot, I'm not eating the eggs.
Nope.
But with bacon, you can kind of always eat the bacon.
Yep, that's right.
And so, yeah, bacon number one, I really like. Yeah, pulled pork is delicious. If I think mainstream pulled pork, if you're not eating at a barbecue restaurant or you're not making it yourself, it's kind of not that good.
Well, that's the kind
but
of thing.
But if it is done right, it is very, very good. And if it's smoked, it's very, very good. And then, yeah, I would say pork ribeye is phenomenal. And it's not, it's better than a pork chop. It's like a steak, but in pork version. It's amazing.
Yep.
I know a lot of people like pork chops, and they're good too, but
I like a good smoked chop.
A smoked pork chop's pretty good. And then last one, I know there's these cheap pork loins that you can buy at the grocery store, and if you're in a, you know, you're in a time crunch, just pop those mofos in the oven and just eat it.
That's the seasoned ones.
Yeah. That's pretty good too.
Yeah, they
I can do that.
Somebody asked, how much time do we spend on hog work, farm work, social media, family, like percentages?
Oh my gosh. That's hard. Man. So I'd say choring is such a hard thing to say what we do because, or how much time that takes, because some days we break up the hog work now. It wasn't always like that, but you know, Dad has his barns that he chores, and then I have designated barns that I chore. And
I typically chore the youngest pigs because I don't like dragging the big ones out because I'm kind of a puss.
Yeah, which is all right. He's, you know, he does the loading. He loads them into the truck, which I give him mad credit for, so I can deal with that. But any given day, if you're talking individual-wise, do you want to go that route, individual-wise?
Yeah.
Or collectively? I mean.
Just collectively. So what I say is, best case scenario, we could be done choring. In a typical day, between the two of us, we could chore everything 3 hours, hour and a half each. Because, like, my pigs,
if they're off right,
yep,
they're healthy, there's nothing wrong as far as maintenance-wise, there's nothing wrong with the feed line, nobody's sick, nobody's, you know, anything like that.
Yep. So
pretty easy.
I'm choring one barn right now. They're started. They're in good shape. Overstocks are going out next week. I can literally go in there, walk down one side, up the other side, down the next room, back up, and head out the door. And if I don't have any pigs that need to be treated, there's no pigs that have died,
feeders
plugged up, the feeders are full.
Water's running.
Yep, I can do that. And I mean, it's like 25 minutes probably. And I mean, by that, that's me washing my boots and me throwing coveralls in the dryer and throwing a pair. I mean, it literally doesn't take much time at all. The flip side of that is, with that group that's now, you know, basically maintenance free, when those came in and they'd weaned down, I could spend, just me could spend 6 hours in that barn. You know, you go in there and spend 3 hours in the morning spot treating, pulling pigs, gruel feeding, sizing them, you know, whatever, and then come back in the afternoon and mat feed everything again, gruel feed again, and then find more pigs to pull. And then the other side of it is, like you on big pigs, you go into a barn and they've got pneumonia, they've got the flu, and you're going to try to treat fat hogs, and the pens are open and you're trying to track down pigs in four pens running together. You can spend so much time trying to treat pigs, it's not even crazy. And then the worst part is, on big pigs, if you have pigs that are dying, by the time you go to the far end of a building with a cart and you get a dead pig out of a pen when all the rest of the pigs are trying to make you into a dead person because they're chewing your, they just chew the shit out of you. Get that pig in the alley.
Jump on top of the pig that you're trying to pull out of there.
Yeah. Get him in the cart, get him, you know, get him out, and then get the skid loader and get that cart in the dead tank. I mean, you can spend, you can shoot a whole, you can shoot easily, you can spend half your time, half your available time on just doing pig work.
Mm-hmm.
And then if something's broken, you know, all.
And the great part about what we do with social media is on the TDF side, a lot of that, yeah. we just whip out the GoPro and we just talk about what we're doing and then we set it down while we're doing a task and it kind of goes hand in hand with what we're doing. I mean, sometimes we got to set up the right angle for you guys to see what we're doing. But I mean, really, that doesn't take that much time. Like the biggest time thing on the social media for TDF is just setting up the cameras, making sure that's good, making sure the GoPro batteries are good, all that stuff. But this takes the editing. Yep. So when we get done with hog work, and we don't have anything else that we're going to do for around the farm, it goes right into social media work. And hell, this is where I struggle because trying to balance your time on having a life for yourself, but also working on the farm, then working on social media, I could spend all day on social media. I could edit 2 videos. I could reach out to other guys and talk to them. I could reach out to potential sponsors. I could, you know, make another piece of merch. We could reach out to people that we want to get on the podcast. I mean, you could spend all day, you could spend the rest of your day just doing that. And a lot of the time that, you know, I do that. So I'd say we get done at noon. Most days we're done with pig work / farm work by noon. We've shot all the stuff we want to shoot for videos. And then from 1 o'clock, because I'll eat and have a little bit of a break, from 1 o'clock to I try to go at 5 o'clock. I'll work on social media, and then I try to go to the gym with my girlfriend, and then I might sit down and read, and then I go to bed.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And I'm pretty similar. I don't have as much social media stuff to do unless I'm editing the podcast. And I've gotten a lot better. I can edit it about 2 days in the afternoons. But then, you know, my wife has a store in town, and there's stuff that needs to be done there. There's meetings I got to go to for this and that and everything else. Yeah,
there's meetings for social media.
And you can always mow the yard if the yard needs mowed, right. Or you can always go to the shop and fix on. You know, there's always stuff to do. So it's a never-ending deal. But
yep. Yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up. I think we got it. We had 2 more questions down, but I don't think we're going to get to them. Dad's a little bit on a time crunch. But I hope you guys got some value out of this. I hope you learned something new. We shared a perspective that you can relate to. Anything like that, share the show if you got any value, guys. Pay the fee. We really appreciate all the support that you guys are giving us. And if you guys ever want to ask questions to be featured on the show, go follow our Instagram at This'll Do Farm and at Barn Talk Show. That's where the questions will be. You can submit your questions in at. So thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next Friday.